House Finance Committee of the meeting that continued from Thursday, the 1st of March, I believe, which was recessed. The call of the chair is adjourned.
Good afternoon. It's 1:38, House Finance. Today we are going to bring up the HB 307, the early supplemental bill, fast track. But this time I'd like to ask Pete, Joan, and James.
Would you like me to move it so we have it before us?
Yeah, we should do that, huh?
Mr. Chair, I move that CS for House Bill number 307 Finance, and that's the work draft dated 27-GH262601, / B, Martin 3112, be approved as a working document for the committee.
Seeing no objection. Sam, Pete, have you and Joan James go through this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Peter Eklund, staff to Co-Chairman Thomas. I think the easiest way to go through this, Mr. Chairman, is each of you in your binder have the original spreadsheet for the original introduced governor's approval bill. Should be in your black binder in front of you. What I'll do, Mr. Chairman, if we... We'll walk through the operating portion and the language section first, go through what has been removed from the governor's introduced supplemental bill. And it's easiest if I just walk through the spreadsheet and I can point out what items have been removed from this spreadsheet. Then lastly, we'll get to the capital portion of the bill, if that's okay.
Everybody have one?
Okay.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Fairclough, it's a 10-page document. Says FY12 supplemental request at the top of it, spreadsheet. So, Mr. Chairman, again, I will just first. I'm going to walk through what has been either removed or moved from the language or from the numbers to the language section in the governor's request. So if I do not mention something, Mr. Chairman, that means it remains in the bill. We haven't changed it. It's still in the bill. So the first change, Mr. Chairman, is item 2. There was $1 million request for the Public Defender Agency. There was a reduction of $50,000 from that $1 million request because it was there was an item asked for in the supplemental that was... It wasn't unanticipated. It wasn't unexpected. It was just an item that they did not ask for and get an increment for in FY12. So we didn't feel it was appropriate for the supplemental at this time. And I guess, Mr. Chairman, maybe I should back up. I'd just put on the record that the four co-chairs, the two in the House and the two in the Senate, have worked together to come up with a document in front of you. And so items that may have been removed or reduced... It doesn't mean that they will not be funded at all. It just means they won't be funded in this early supplemental bill. They're still up for discussion at a later time in a later supplemental bill. The next item, Mr. Chairman, is item number 4.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make sure that I understood what had just happened in item number 2. So the item stays in, but $50,000 is a reduction in it. Is that correct?
To the chair, Representative Dugan, that's correct.
Thank you very much.
So what you're finding in the bill is $950,000.
Thank you.
The next change, Mr. Chairman, is item number 4. There was a request for $244,600. That was reduced by $100,000. dollars of authority. There was alleged finance note that just questioned whether or not the full request could be expended in the rest of the FY12 fiscal year, so we reduced that by $100,000. The next change, Mr. Chairman, was item number 6. There was a request for $3,439,800 of general fund receipts to the Department of Commerce. That item's been removed. There is ongoing discussions between legislative finance, our office, your office, and the department about how those requested funds would be parceled out amongst the different boards. So at this time, that item has been removed. The next change, Mr. Chairman, is on item number 7. There was a request for $250,000 of receipt-supported services. That item, the $250,000 is still granted, but the funding sources have been changed and split. $210,000 is RSS, remains as RSS, and $40,000 is made up of GFPR. And it's expected to come from corporate business and licensing receipts. On page 2 of 10, the next change is item number 10. There was a request for $1 million from the Department of Education. That item has been removed for further discussions with the subcommittee chair and Ledge Finance in your office, Mr. Chairman. The next item is items 15 and 16. Joan will talk about those items more later, but they've been funded, but the way it's been funded has been changed. It's been moved to the language section of the bill. We go to page number 3 on your spreadsheet. Item number 22. $250,000 for to replace unrealized program receipts at ACTEC have been removed from this bill. The next item that's different is item number 24, $600,000 for fast ferry litigation. It's been approved in this in the bill, but it's been moved to the language section and made a multi-year appropriation, so it's FY12 and FY13. Item number 25 is very similar. It's the next item that's been changed. It's been approved in the bill, but the $300,000 has been moved to the language section, and it's been made a multi-year, so it can be expended in FY12 and FY13. Skipping all the way to page 9. Item number 78 was a request by corrections to reappropriate $100,000 for Highland Mountain Center land transfer. After talking to legislative finance, it's been removed for further investigation whether or not Department of Corrections is the proper receipt of that reappropriation request. Item number 80, judgment and claim, judgments and settlements. The total request was $20,770,800. In the bill, there is still $770,800 approved. What's been removed is a $20 million request for the university or optional retirement program. There was a settlement. In discussions with Ledge Finance and others, we removed it this time to talk about other potential funding sources other than just the general fund for that item.
Representative Guttenberg.
On that university settlement, I know that was in progress but hadn't been finalized a couple weeks ago. Has it been ratified?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, my understanding is it has been ratified. It's just awaiting approval, and it's been removed here, but that doesn't mean that it's not going to be approved by the end of the day. Finally, Mr. Chairman, on page 10 of 10, item number 89, there was a provision in the original bill that said any unspent money in FY12 got swept into the budget reserve fund. That item has been removed out of this bill, and it will be considered in other appropriation bills. And then finally, the effective date of this legislation is March 15th. It's been changed to March 15th. And so those are the reductions or the things that have been pulled from the bill. Joan's going to talk about some of the additions, some of the new things in the operating side and the language side to the bill.
Right. For the record, my name is Joan Brown, staff to Co-Chair Thomas. In the numbers section, we did add some negative supplemental items in a few departments. The total of those is $715,000. It's basically where funds have been given to the agencies for FY12, usually associated with new positions, and they had not filled the positions for the entire year. So those are in the Department of Commerce. They've got $84,100 in economic development. In the Department of Health and Social Services, $200,000 in frontline social workers, $250,000 in nursing. In the Department of Law, they have $21,100 in criminal appeals, special litigation, and $53,800 for a new child protection attorney and paralegal that were only filled for part of the year. Also had $96,200 vacancy related to a fiscal note for Senate Bill 58 that was passed last year. And in the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, $10,000 was removed in the Army Guard maintenance component, again, because of a vacancy. Let's see. Some of the other changes that have been made. That's where I'm heading. In the governor's original supplemental bill, there was a request for $2,620,300 to fully fund the LIHEAP appropriations, or the Energy Assistance Program appropriations. The request was that level because there were two contingency appropriations for FY12 that totaled $8 million. The contingency wording did not work. So what we've done in the supplemental bill is we've repealed the contingency appropriations and just appropriated a flat $8,500,000. So the supplemental is actually reduced by $2 million for LIHEAP, and it fully funds the department's expected energy assistance payment costs. The Disaster Relief Fund, at the end of the bill, it's in the Fund Capitalization Section 14. We increased the amount from $3 million to $5 million in conjunction with the governor's amendment that we received yesterday. And Pete's already mentioned the other two items that we moved from numbers to language, the base realignment and closure commission in Military and Veterans Affairs. And the fast ferry litigation. So you'll also see in the bill a new repeal section, section 16. That is simply the repeal of one of the unworkable LIHEAP contingency appropriations. And we've adjusted the lapse and the retroactivity provisions accordingly. So I think those are all the changes that we've made in language.
So, Mr. Chairman, those are the changes to the operating and the language section of the bill. And then Mr. Armstrong was going to talk about the changes to the capital portion of the bill.
Hi, James Armstrong, Staff Representative Stoltz. Members look at their spreadsheet, go to page 7 and 8. And projects, the only project that remains in the bill is number 54. Projects 55 through 72 on the next page were removed from the bill, and they will be included in probably the capital budget as with April 15th effective dates. I had conversations with Ms. Rayfield from OMB, and those could wait. Number 54 could it needed to have it. So in the bill, on page 10, you'll see the capital budget. There's one page of capital budget projects. So if members go to the bill. On 12 through 18 is a grant to Anchorage to replace a fire and rescue station number 35. 16 through 18, some emergency repairs to the Cordova Hospital. I spoke on 21 and 22 about the Inner Island Ferry Authority. That remains. And lines 28 through 30, this was in the governor's capital budget for FY13. We received an amendment from OMB last night to accelerate this. Apparently the pipes froze this past November. Representative Heron can speak to that. And Representative Sadler is in the audience that he can speak to the fire station. So those are the four changes for capital side.
Questions? Representative Guerra.
Mr. Chair, the questions have to do with things that you didn't adjust. I don't know if they go to Ms. Rayfield.
The chairs.
Oh. There was one I didn't understand on page 4, line 33. Just looking at this, is my understanding correct that these are funds received from the Red Dog Mine that are being spent on the Red Dog Mine?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra. Their statutory designated program receipts, so yes, they would be funds supplied by an outside entity to the state for a specific purpose.
All right. And, Mr. Chair, on page 3, line 23, I just feel like this one's never going to end, but... this is another example of the Department of Law hiring very expensive outside counsel. We've always had a very strong oil and gas unit at the Attorney General's office, and it's just far, far cheaper to have folks in-house doing that work. All we ever get are sort of responses that we'll consider doing that in the future, but that one causes me concern. I mean, I bet you the hourly rates are somewhere between $250 an hour to $650 an hour, depending on what kind of contract was cut, but in-house attorneys are way cheaper than that.
Comments? Representative Garrett, in my short 6 years in finance, I've heard this argument year after year in the Attorney General's office says what happens after they've been litigating for 10 or 15 years, state employees leave, and when they leave, there's nobody there to take the cases, and typically or normally they have to rehire that person when he goes to a private law firm. And so you don't get him for a song and a dance anymore. You now have to pay him for his practice fees. That's my understanding, and that's why we have contract labor out there. It's on very limited and special cases that we've had. People, we see them come and go all the time from here, so... You know, unless I'm wrong, you know, maybe we can bring the AG up here, but I think I'm correct. It's just when people leave.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I've been at the Attorney General's office. There are very rare circumstances where somebody possesses the kind of knowledge that somebody new can't pick up on, but this is just a regular practice at the AG's office, and I think
Are you calling me a liar?
No.
I'm telling you, I know somebody.
I can't hurt Dugan. So.
You know, the Amaretta Hess case was one. There was a that Will Condon knew more than anybody in the world on that issue, and so when he left, they hired him. But it's not the common practice. You can usually train a new person to continue litigation.
James.
I neglected to mention that the backup for the four projects are members' packets. So.
At this time, we have two reps sitting out there. If you guys will grab your chairs, and Representative Sadler and Representative Heron.
By lunch, whoever talks the briefest.
Donuts or cookies. I bought cookies. I don't know if you eat any Girl Scout cookies or not, but I bought them yesterday. Free. So I get a couple phone calls. Anyway, Representative Heron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bob Heron, House District 38, the Lower Kuskokwim. Briefly to this request is that over the Christmas holidays, when there was a skeleton crew in the school, no children, is that we had a disaster with the water sewer line from the city of Bethel. And so it was because of the weather that a lot of Alaska had to endure. And so basically a catastrophe. And it wasn't until mid-January that we were able to get the children back into the school. So I went to the co-chair, Representative Thomas, when we got down here, and to Representative Stoltz and to the governor to see if we could move this up as the governor had requested in the capital budget.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Dan Sadler, Representative House District 18, which is Eagle River, Chugiak, and Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson. It's kind of a somewhat similar situation. The excessive winter snows damaged the roof of a fire station in my district that people rely on for service to the core area of Eagle River, to some high-density housing and some schools. In order to get moving quickly on design construction so we can avoid the life safety risks of having no fire service in that area, come before you with a request for capital funds in the supplemental you got by letter. And it's a significant risk for the people in my district, and I hope you can consider it favorably.
Thank you. One of the things that we didn't point out that I think Representative Heron and the Cordova project are seasonal. They need to get the roofs. The one in Cordova is also a result of snow damage and just old age and has to be replaced. It was in the budget last year. It was dropped. And so these are seasonal. So that's why these projects are on here, because they need to be, the attention needs to be immediate. That's why you don't see any other capital projects on here.
And Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Stoltz.
It was a very conscious decision, and the co-chair, the other co-chair and I, who do the capital and others do, only put the capital that actually had an emergency nature to it in there. And those are what you're seeing in here, for things that probably weren't thinking of a month ago or 2 months ago. And the Bethel stuff is in the governor's amended budget. So.
We want to make sure Representative Heron's community gets the first barges and they go out to bid and get everything done properly. So we know that it rains everywhere, and Cordova is no exception, and they want minimal weather. They don't want to be waiting next to, I believe, I don't know, I've sent the picture to everybody in the building, I think, of the condition of their roof. And I told them I don't represent Cordova anymore. Redistricting plan, I'm out of there. So I'm doing this for Representative Osterman and Senator Stevens, so
yeah,
anyway.
And I say that the project that says Chugiak is not my district, and her redistricting, I guess if that's relevant, it's even further away.
These are like disclaimers. People say, well, the co-chairs are here. I said, no, we're not. These are emergency, if you have an emergency and you see one before we get this thing done, but convince the co-chairs, but we work with the administration on these, so questions?
Just that, Mr. Chairman, both these gentlemen will be my constituents, so I want to support them.
uh, comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Is there anybody out in the audience wants to testify? Seeing none, we'll close the public testimony. Is there a motion to move the...
I guess we ask for amendments.
Amendments.
Not too vigorously.
Seeing none.
I'm not going to be surprised. It's practical.
Yeah, I know.
The Chairman, obviously we don't have a fiscal note. The bill in itself is a fiscal note. I'll move CS for House Bill 307 Finance 27GH 2601, next SB Martin 3112, from committee with individual recommendations.
Any opposition?
Mr. Chair, yeah, just an objection briefly. I probably missed the amendment discussion, but on page 1, line 2, just from the information we have, I suspect I know what happened. The Office of Public Advocacy did this a few years ago. They try and come in with as small a budget as they can, and as the year goes on, they realize they should have asked for more than they asked for. And so the way item number 2 was explained, going down from $1 million to $950,000 for the supplemental, it was that that funding wasn't originally asked for, that position. But I know what happens inside those agencies. They try and keep their budgets as small as possible. I don't think that's a great reason for not funding that $50,000 extra item. I mean, we do know that at OPA, at the district attorney's office, at the public defender's office, these are all people that work far more than 40, 50, sometimes 60 hours a week, and in small quarters. And I guess I would like to see that part restored, unless there's some better explanation that they didn't ask for it.
No, we got a better explanation. They asked for it, but what happens? We appropriate the money, they get it, they go out to advertise, and it might be 1 or 2 or 3 months before they fill that position, so they end up with that extra money. And that's why we swept the departments and brought it back. As my understanding, they're fully funded for this year, and that person's in place. So okay. It's only the extra money that was left there. And we started doing that last year. So,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a fair explanation. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
I remove my objection.
Okay, with the objection removed, the CS for House Bill number 307 moves from finance. We'll take a brief recess.
Finance come back to order after that brief recess. We'll see Representative Heron. We'll just skip to HJR 4 and we'll come back to the House Bill 78 next. I will yield to Vice Chair Fairclough, who chaired the subcommittee on House Joint Resolution 30 and other associated bills that were connected to this, but we only have HJR 4. Did I say 30? I meant to say 4 if I didn't. Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of House Finance, last session we had three bills before us that went into subcommittee. Last year during the transportation meetings, all three bills were heard here in Finance as well as in the Transportation Committee. During the interim, with the support of Representative Costello, Representative Stoltz, Representative Guttenberg, and Representative Guerra, we met at different locations across the state. We met in Fairbanks, Nome, Ketchikan, and Anchorage, and took public testimony at each location. Everywhere we went, there was strong public support for a dedication of transportation funds. They gave us comments on all three bills, but this one in particular. And with that, our suggestions have been incorporated into a CS that is labeled Finance for your consideration, and I'd ask Representative Wilson to come forward if it's all right with the.
Why don't you go ahead and move this and object so we'll have something before us to discuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move the CS for House Joint Resolution Number 4, Finance 27-LS0197-T, Martin 3112.
I'll object, and Representative Wilson. P. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Representative Peggy Wilson, District 2, and I think what I'll do is have my staff go over the changes, unless you had another idea of how to do that, and then I'll go into my comments.
Why don't you just go ahead and proceed with testimony?
And not worry about the changes?
Oh yeah. Why don't we? Why don't you go through those? Yeah, I thought maybe you were going to. But we'll have you present the changes.
For the record, Becky Rooney, staff to Representative Peggy Wilson. The new CS you have before you is version T Finance, and it has a number of deletions. These were made to remove details from the constitutional amendment. The provisions removed will be added to the enabling legislation. The CS also updates specific dates within the legislation and changes the payout rate. Now, as I go through this, I'd like to refer to the previous version, which is version D, to explain the changes so you can see what was deleted. So if you look at page 1, line 14, that was where the date was changed. We just updated it so that it's for this year. Page 1, line 14, that was the date. Then page 1, line 14 through 16, and page 2, lines 1 and 2, after from, we deleted any state tax on fuel used for the propulsion of motor vehicles, aircraft, and watercraft, less those refunds, credits, and collection costs that are provided by law from a registration fee levied for a motor vehicle, not including special registration fees as provided by law from any driver's license fee, from any identification card fee, and from a studded tire tax, and from other. So we removed all of those. Page 2, line 3, after funds, we deleted designated by the legislature. Page 2, line 6, after 50% of the, we deleted state fuel tax, registration and driver's license fees, identification card fees, studded tire taxes, and other designated. Page 2, line 8, 6 was replaced with 7. And page 2, line 2 of version T is where you'll see that same, or the CS that you have before you, you'll see that same change. And page 2, line 10, after designated by law, we deleted for costs related to motor vehicle licensing and registration that are designated by law. Now, on version T, which is the finance version, you will see on at page 2, line 5, we added a new sentence, the legislature shall by law determine which fees and funds are transportation related under this section.
So, Ms. Rooney and Representative Wilson, so this basically is, it's been, we've changed it so it just allows a dedicated fund, much like we did in the case of the permanent fund, and the legislature through policy will, this will allow either direct appropriations or a dedication. That policy decision aren't going to be written into the Constitution, that this is a broad allowance of a dedicated fund, and the legislature will make the appropriation decisions on how this is implemented. Is that a fair assessment?
Basically, yes.
Okay. All right. Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to highlight that the 7% is an up-to amount, and again, that allows the legislature to set statute without having to go back into the Constitution. So on a really good year, if there were great needs somewhere in our state, it would allow flexibility for the legislature to come back and say that you should take more money or not, but it allows in a downturn market under state statute to set a 4% payout rate or a 5% depending on what the legislative body wants to do. So this constitutional amendment allows, as the co-chair has said, the dedication of funds, but it allows the legislature itself the greatest flexibility in contributing to that and managing it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to make a few comments that I think will answer most questions about the CS. Today, we're, of course, hearing HJR 4. And like the rest of the country, Alaska is challenged with maintaining, upgrading, and creating transportation infrastructure. I think we can all agree that we have a serious shortfall in transportation funding, which could be made worse by the new federal reauthorization bill. That bill is rumored to cut Alaska's federal transportation funds by at least or up to 30%, if not more. And this is an interesting fact. According to the World Economic Forum, in 2005, the United States was ranked as number one in the world for our infrastructure. Now, in just 7 short years later, we're not even in the top 10. So that tells you what's happening overall. And Alaska hasn't even caught up with the Lower 48 yet. As federal funding is diminishing and Alaska's infrastructure is aging, we as a state need to shoulder more responsibility for our own transportation infrastructure. HJR 4 will put a proposed amendment to the Alaska Constitution before the voters to reinstate a dedicated transportation a fund for transportation projects. Historians write that the drafters of the Alaska Constitution were concerned that dedicated funds would impair future legislatures from responding to evolving public needs. However, the drafters of our Constitution grandfathered 2 dedicated transportation funds. The first was for highways, and the second was for water and harbor facilities. The drafters recognized the public need for dependable and efficient transportation, and that need has only grown. Testifiers for this bill have agreed that the state needs a reliable revenue stream that doesn't fluctuate from year to year. With a dedicated fund, Alaska can implement a transportation fund that is independent of the federal government. In order to implement the Alaska Transportation Infrastructure Fund, there are 3 pieces of legislation that need to pass. First, the bill before you is to put this constitutional amendment on the ballot. Second is to set up enabling statutes that direct how the fund will be administered, what the revenues will be deposited into the fund, how these revenues will be spent, what the payout rate will be, and it will also define the entity that will evaluate projects for funding. And the third part of the bill, or of the group, will fund the corpus of the Transportation Infrastructure Fund with $1 billion. Today, because we're hearing HJR 4, which will put the constitutional amendment before the voters to reinstate a dedicated transportation fund, the CS before you, T, made really 2 substantive changes. The language has been modified to make the constitutional amendment broad enough so that it will be useful 10, 20, and even 100 years from now. We have removed all the details about which funds will be deposited into ATIF and what projects can be funded with ATIF. These detailed provisions will be added to the enabling statutes. In addition to making the Constitution Amendment broader so that it will serve into the future, these deletions have made the amendment more clear and concise. The second change is that increasing the maximum payout rate, and I believe that the payout rate for today should be in the neighborhood of 4 or 4.5% rather than 7%. We do not want to chip away at the corpus of the fund. However, what we don't know is what the payout rate should be 20 or 30 years from now. And I think it's prudent to give the legislature the flexibility to use the fund and still maintain a small growth rate. 10 years ago, it would have been perfectly normal to have a growth rate of 10%. Now, however, today's market is not as favorable. Setting the payout rate in statute with a ceiling in the Constitution will give the legislature the latitude to manage the fund in future years based on the market of the day, while preserving the corpus of the fund, which is important. In your packet, you have a list of the organizations who have voiced their support for the Alaska Transportation Infrastructure Fund. It's really quite a list, and they are the people that we can depend on to get this amendment passed by the voters in the November election. Alaska does need to take action now. The future of the economic and social well-being of Alaska's citizens is critically dependent on a reliable transportation system. Infrastructure is a platform upon which a society functions. This change to the state constitution allows a dedicated transportation fund, and this is needed to create and maintain a modern, reliable transportation system for Alaska. I urge you to move this resolution from committee so that it can be on the ballot this fall.
I'll remove my objection to the adoption of CS, which I probably should have done a few minutes ago, but we will. Is there any other objection? We've adopted the CS. Representative Newman.
Yeah, I just had a question for the sponsor.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wilson, who decides on the payout of the funding? We've got a fund. How's the payout done? Who decides what projects get funded?
That will be decided in the enabling legislation, whatever this legislature decides.
I think it's fair to say the default is the legislature and how they designate it. Is that, and how we delineate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Representative Wilson, I think you've done as good a job as you can on putting together a dedicated fund provision. If I could vote for it based on your effort, I would. And I have every intention of saying this is something that should be voted upon by the full floor, so I'm going to pass this out of the committee despite my reservations. And here's my reservation. I think the dedicated funds provision in the Constitution was one of the wisest things the founders did. Because if you have one dedicated fund, where does it end? You might need one for law enforcement, because we always want to have law enforcement in this state. And you might need one for education, because you always want to have a strong education system in the state. And you might need one for the university. And you might need one to deal with domestic violence and children's issues. And at some point, you have no money left. We have roughly, depending on who's counting and what accounts you count, we have about $19 billion in surplus right now. But we owe $11 billion of that to fund the PERS-TER system. And I think as going forward, we're just going to have to prioritize our spending. And, you know, we're going to have tax credit bills that come here. We're going to have education requests that come here. We're going to have public safety requests that come here, substance abuse requests to get to help us get out of some of these many last places that we're in the nation. And transportation ranks right up there as just as important. But I think we're going to have to rank those things. And
And I envision as if state funds start to dwindle, we're going to have to tell maybe some of the bigger cities that when you come here to ask the state to pay for city roads, we don't have the money to do that. I'm more sympathetic to communities that don't have the tax base to do those things. But, you know, we have been pretty liberal about giving state money to cities for city roads. And if at some point we don't have enough money for state roads and small community transportation, we're going to have to prioritize there. So I appreciate the bill. I want you to be able to get a full vote on the House floor. But just because I like you doesn't mean I can't that I can violate my conscience on this one, and I can't.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One thing that the transportation does have for it that a lot of the other groups don't is that we do have user fees and that are definitely connected to transportation. And so that's just a comment that is a possibility in this instance.
Thank you. Before I call Representative Dugan, constitutional amendment is a serious issue. If somebody voted to keep it in committee, I certainly wouldn't have it like any other bill. That would that's a reflection of your opinion on movement. So it's they were going to have other constitutional amendments. One that I will also plan on voting for on education. Part of the process. You certainly can favor keeping stuff from advancing further, and that's I don't everything doesn't. Have to come to a vote. I mean, that's part of our process as well. We have committees. That Representative Dugan, I just want to make a record that there's not an inherent the constitutional amendment push it before because there are reasons why you might want it, not want to. And I think actually everybody has an opinion. We may run into that on another bill I favor. So I may try to convince the heck out of you, but I would never put pressure to say. It's a big step going to the floor with the Constitution Amendment. That on the record. Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is a big step. And as the sponsor of the Constitutional Amendment will testify, I've been sort of a hard case on this since the first time it was broached. But I think she's done as good a job as could possibly be done for this kind of legislation, and I think also that the subcommittee made that job better in terms of what has come out. So, you know, I don't like dedicated funds. You know, I've had bills in the legislature to try and strip them out. You know, didn't work, but I tried just simply on the basis of a lot of what Representative Garris said. You know, once you get tied into a dedicated fund, you're tied into it. But transportation has a historical leg up in Alaska that we have to recognize that if we're not ever going to look at the efforts of the people who came before us and why they did the things that they did, then essentially we're throwing history out the door every day, and I'm not prepared to do that. So, you know, I've come over on this. I'm not absolutely sure. I'm not making a commitment to the details of the other bills that are involved in this. But on this one, I've finally become comfortable with the idea of voting for it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks. And I think you've had designated funds. You've been pretty vocal on that, too, which just a less almost as formal, but just not as protected. Representative Thomas.
Thank you. I apologize for not being here earlier. I might have covered that. Fisherman's Fund is a dedicated fund that covers the health of fishermen we pay in, and that was started in, I believe, 1948 or 50 or some real long time ago, and fishermen put in X number of dollars into the fund, and they're self-insured. And we just amended that a couple years ago to go from $2,500 to $10,000, and it works. So I think it's a good idea. I just keep telling Representative Wilson, it's too bad you can't put $4 or $5 million into the, because just a couple weeks ago we listened to the guy from the Fed, from NCSL, telling us how much federal funds we're going to start losing, and the lowest hanging fruit is probably going to be the highways.
I think you meant billion, right?
Billions. 9%. I mean, yeah, we should have we should have a way to keep throwing money into this, especially, you know, let's say the oil does come back and big fields get struck, but find it. But anyway, I think with the loss of the federal funds, we're going to have a little salt someplace and put away for Marine Highway Fund. Maybe it's, does this include out of Harvester? No, just kidding. But I'm going to vote to move it out. I don't know if I'll vote for it on the floor. No, I will. I think the days of federal funds are going to be really short here pretty soon. We have to do what we can while we have it to start putting some money aside to take care of us. Okay, I'm listening.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say thank you to the subcommittee. I know they put a lot of work, a lot of travel during the summer, and for Representative Wilson putting this before, because I think a lot of people in the state would be very shocked that the money that we pay for, you know, at the gas pump in the DMV doesn't already automatically go in to roads. And so I think this will bring a great discussion for the state to find out that it just kind of goes into the general fund and to all sorts of things. I believe if we were doing with our money what we needed to, we probably would have needed the bill if we were putting it into the infrastructure like we should have. I've learned, too, along the way that state funding can get us a lot further than federal funding because we don't have to jump through so many hoops. And if nothing else, if this passes, it gives us that option. We don't have to necessarily grab onto federal funds that could get us down the road into a much worse situation. So I know a lot of people put a lot of time into this, and I'm glad it got to this point. And I can definitely tell you I want it out of committee. I want to vote on the floor. And I'm excited, really, to see what the public will do. It will be a great education, I think, for the entire state to realize where those funds are going now. So thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Guttenberg.
Some comments and observation. When this first came up on the table, I was concerned about it. I still am. But one of the things that the constitutional framers had was a committee called Draft and Styling. Or Styling and Drafting, I think that's one or the other. So they would take an idea that passed through the committee, and the writers would rewrite it in a succinct, flowing manner. And when you read the Constitution, you could see that. The committee did a really good job on rendering this down to what that would be, and I think this would fit in very nicely with the original Constitution drafters, because you got there, I think, with the fund. What bothers me about the nature of the amendment is not so much creating a dedicated fund, but after the fact, we are going to write laws to implement the process, and we still have the same appropriation powers and processes. We're putting the money aside into a fund, and just like when we did when the educational endowment dedicated fund endowment was on the table in the 80s, you know, the argument was to do the same thing, and people pointed out that, you know, in the tight times, that might be all the money there is, and people might make an excuse that that's the fund and that's all there is. But still, on any given year, you're going to have this fund, and how it's administered, we haven't written yet. You're going to have a STIP. You're going to have an FMATS. You're going to have an AMATS. You're going to have other things, and we're going to come back to the table and do the same political process that has now. And I don't know what the answer to get past that is, but, you know, we're just a phenomenally young state with phenomenally young growing pains and needs, you know, to be where we I think we all want to be at some point. But this is going to be a hard road for me on the floor, but I'll certainly support getting it out of committee. But you've done a good job, Peggy.
Anyone? Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I may not have it right, but the federal government is currently working on that reauthorization bill, and the new numbers that they're looking at for qualified metropolitan planning organizations look to be going way up, so there may not be any metropolitan planning organizations in our state Yeah, I think they were considering moving it to a million people for their density, and so Fairbanks and Anchorage may not be MPOs shortly once that federal legislation passes, or if it does. Just as far as layers go, so Representative Gunberg, you're absolutely right for right now, but I know that at least that particular component is under consideration. And for other clarification, the current bill as it stands with the feds is keeping Alaska's transportation funding formula the same. And so right now we are not being held at a different standard than we are currently today for how that would be calculated. So Alaska stands to benefit if that holds true in the final passage of the bill. But I just want to make sure those were on the record for
you. I thought it was a continuing resolution. Was even if there is a new bill that is injurious to us. Is that so? It's actually the bill that the President and the Senate and the Congress had pushed forward. Or I'm trying to remember where it started. I think it was the Senate in the administration. That's the one that will have significant cuts, and that's being forestalled because TLU is being kept alive through a series of continuing resolutions, but that won't last forever. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Mr. Chairman, you're right that TLU has been reauthorized, but there is another bill that is the bill of choice right now in the legislative body of the federal government that Alaska's funding formula for transportation is. That formula stays the same. It does not harm us like the other bill had done, and that was the vehicle of choice. But as you know, Congress will do what Congress will do, and so until it passes, it could be either of our scenarios, Representative.
And I'll try to try. That's a little information is always dangerous. But there is a lot of uncertainty on federal funding. I think that's fair to say. Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to echo the comments around the table. I think you've done a great job, Representative Wilson. And in my conversations with the Department of Transportation Department, you know, the absolute worst-case scenario is that Alaska gets hit twice. One, that the federal act gets reduced, and then our per capita amount gets reduced. And you know, the gloom and doom scenario, as I understand it, would be a loss in about, you know, maybe up to 70, 75% of that $700 million or so plus in federal dollars that we get for the capital budget. And my figures are round figures. So I may be off a little bit. So this whole effort right here, $1 billion at 7%, you know, that's what $70 million a year. It represents a good starting point. And you know, there's language for additional appropriations. So I mean, just to put all that in context, even $1 billion paying out 7% a year is going to still require a lot more money to make up for what I think is almost certain federal reductions in the future, but this certainly represents a good start.
Thank you. Representative Jewell, and then Fairfoot. Okay, done your point. Go ahead, Representative Fairfoot, and then Jewell.
While we're talking about the $1 billion, that was a different appropriation bill, and that's not what's before us today. This sets up the structure and the policy conversation for the people of Alaska. But the $1 billion is a separate piece of legislation, and certainly Representative Wilson, Peggy Wilson, has said that would be a good starting point for this bill, but that is not moving forward, at least today. The only thing here is the actual structure. So I didn't want the people that might be listening to think that there was a $1 billion appropriation on the table today. This is the structure for a dedicated fund and that policy discussion.
And were there hypothetically to be $1 billion, this would set up a structure that it wouldn't all be spent in 1 year, so that's the dedicated fund assurance. So that's Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you might have said this in so many words, but I didn't hear it in other words. I'm just reviewing the Constitution, and in the Constitutional Budget Reserve, it requires a three-quarter vote if we're going to access that, and some of us have been down those roads. So my question is this. If we ever come to a time in our place in our finances where we need to access those funds maybe for something else related to this state, does this allow a mechanism for us to be able to spend that money for things other than transportation?
Uh,
not in the constitutional amendment itself, but if that's something that would, you know, in the enabling legislation. I'll let she's shaking her head, so I better let her answer.
I don't believe it would. That's yes. The constitutional amendment, and it would require another 2/3 vote of the each body of the legislature and approval of the voters in a general election.
Right, Mr. Chairman, and I recognize that because that's the only way we can access the permanent fund. And that was really my point. And I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying that if you're in an odd year, you've got to wait 2 years to do something that might be very important to do in a time space otherwise. But yet we do this with our eyes wide open.
That's all. That will all be discussed in the public on the floor and in the public debate, I'm sure, if it gets to the as one of the merits in the merit. Any other questions?
I do have a question,
Mr.
Thank you. Representative Wilson and Representative Dugan referenced it, and actually I'm behind you on this. So this is a new constitutional dedicated fund, and one of the arguments was the framers had approved dedicated funds for transportation in the past. Obviously, they're not the size of this, or we wouldn't need this. So what's happened to those dedicated funds? Did they disappear, or are they just small?
They actually just plain disappeared, because when the last time that we had, when we raised the fuel gas tax, the drafters mistakenly thought they had to get rid of that dedicated fund at the time, and so when they raised the fuel tax, they got rid of the dedicated fund.
Thanks.
Any other questions? We'll go to the fiscal notes.
Mr. Chairman, I would draw the committee's attention to the first fiscal note from the Office of the Governor for Elections in FY13, $1.5, I think it's $1,500 to put this on the ballot.
That's the extra page in the pamphlet, I believe, is the standard appropriation.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The second fiscal note, Mr. Chairman, is from the Department of Revenue, Tax, and Treasury. Mr. Chairman, I move to strike FY14 through FY18 and put zeros under all years.
Yeah, I would concur with that, because we don't know that we're going to have a fund to administer, and we haven't had the debate of there being the amount. That will be the obligation of a future legislature. I think it's probably good that they mention a possible cost in conjunction, but I don't think there is there is an appropriation and we start dedicating it, I think we have plenty of time to deal with that in FY14, should this pass.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, it could be even dealt with if we actually had an appropriation bill in front of us.
I'd probably jump in the cart in front of the horse on this, but it's probably good to have an honest discussion on it, but I think it's a little early to have the fiscal note. But to recognize that if we do this, there will be costs in the future to administer it, and that's another good part of that. I'd like that to remain in the record that the fiscal note was discussed, that we zeroed it out for that reason, but should there be an appropriation, that would be, that's certainly an important part of any discussion that's going to take place should this reach the ballot. So is there any objection to the zeroing out the fiscal note? Only for the Department of Revenue, not for elections. It will remain on the record that we discussed it. Are there any amendments? We'll make the motion and see if there's any final discussion points.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to place before the committee, I move from the committee the CS for House Joint Resolution Number 4, Finance 27-LS0197/T from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, it's moved from committee. We'll stand at ease for about a minute while we sign the report and let Representative Herron get ready. Finance come back to order. We will bring the House Joint Resolution number four back before us. And I was, and as we were debating this vigorously, I forgot to ask if there was public testimony. And I, is there anybody online that wished to testify? And if there is any, we'll read. Is there anybody here? Is there anybody here in the committee? Representative Jewell.
And I appreciate that, and I think it's the right thing to do. I just wanted to question. We've had public testimony on this in the prior iteration, didn't we?
Yeah. Right,
okay.
I just, it's a constitutional amendment. And right. We were talking ourselves, and I just, we are very, we're pretty rigid on the whole public testimony. But, is there any, anybody? We'll go ahead and close public testimony. Again, we did have public testimony throughout the state and previously in committees that I don't think I'd ever closed it before because I knew it would be back before us. So, but that matter taken forward, we've already acted on the bill. But we will, the previous motion moving out will still stay in place. And was I at ease?
Yeah. No, you were back on.
And back on. Brief means, thanks. Let's come back to order after a delay, and I appreciate everybody's indulgence as we've had a busy day. House Bill 78, thank you for your patience, Representative Heron, and bring up anybody who'd like to join you.
Your staff would probably be a good great ally to have up there.
I have seven amendments. Carrying a couple for comment.
I look forward to each one.
Does everybody have the committee substitute? Dated, well, that's actually for the constitutional amendment. Besides me, everybody has the work draft for the House Finance CS for House Bill 78. Mr. Co-Chair, can you move that so we can ask Mr. Jack, so we can ask Mr. Michelle to move the changes?
Hey, Mr. Co-Chair, I move CS for House Bill number 78 Finance version 27-LS0147/0, Michelle. 3112 is a working document for the committee.
And that wasn't the same Michelle that's presenting as that drafted this.
Seems fishy.
It's a different spelling and I believe a different gender.
I don't know.
Ouch. Well, I mean, was that offensive?
It was the I believe the part of it.
Yeah. No, I've never met it. I'm going to shut up here. I'll object, Mr. Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Joe Michelle, staff to Representative Bill Stoltz.
Yes, with an E.
Joe Michelle, staff to Representative Bill Stoltz. In the work draft version in front of the committee, It's version O. There are three changes, and they all have to do with putting language in there to include advanced nurse practitioners into this piece of legislation. The insertion was made on page 7, section 2, page 7, section 3, and finally in section 5 on page 8. And those were the required sections to include advanced nurse practitioners into this piece of legislation. If there are any questions regarding this amendment, Christine Potter is online, and she's president of the Alaska Nurse Practitioners Association, and she can answer any questions.
Is anybody pretty familiar with nurse practitioners, I assume? And is there any question? I will jump ahead. We'll come to you in general testimony, then I'll remove my objection. Just only note that this doesn't increase the pool of money, but it does the pool of eligible people. So it doesn't change the fiscal note. Is that correct, Mr. Michelle? I'm sorry to let you leave.
Chair, the fiscal note has not changed on HB 78.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Representative, I'll remove my objection so the finance CS is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bob Heron, representative from House District 38, the lower Kuskokwim. Of course, this legislation has been before you, and then over the subcommittee, myself, co-chairs Stoltz, Representative Costello, Representative Guttenberg, and Representative Jewell were members, and appreciate the work that we did and the testimony that we took in a subcommittee hearing in September. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the time to hear this bill. You've heard it before, as I said, and I'll keep my comments brief. I do have three lifelines in the room. We have Liz from my staff, Pat Carr, and Joe Lewis from the department for those technical answers that members may need. Of course, across the state, serious shortage of health care providers, and we want access to good providers. But right now, many of us, doesn't matter what size of community, we don't have access to certain providers or any providers. And so in rural Alaska, it's because of our remoteness, but urban Alaskans suffer because they struggle to find those health care providers that will see them. This legislation will fill a gap. It creates a loan repayment and direct cash incentive program to attract and retain providers in 10 different direct care professions. The intent is not only to capture those new graduates, but mid-career professionals, people that have established practices, to come up to our state and to stay here. Now, there are some federally funded programs already in place, but they're just not enough. And so let's build a program that's designed by Alaskans for Alaskans. Now, this is not new. 47 other states, they have this type of incentive program. So it really is can we afford not to compete with those other states, because some places are more attractive to live for a lot of different reasons. But I believe that this legislation would make us more competitive. So it's a private market supporting mechanism that helps Alaskans in a measurable way. Now, it won't be solved overnight, but at least we'll put a tool and a mechanism in place. And so there has been support letters from other people that would like to see it. My constituents need it, and hopefully others will take advantage of this. Of course, my lifelines are available for questions, and I'll try to answer any. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Heron. we talk about making us more competitive, and I understand trying to get more medical personnel in the state, and I'm trying to understand how it could possibly affect the opportunities for less costs in the medical industry. So if the state's investing in a disincentive program, is there any opportunity to help reduce costs for medicine for the people of Alaska, Ms. Billing?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, that's, you know, that's actually a very large question. Is if, in my opinion, if we have five specialists, doesn't matter whether they're at, spread out through Alaska or even concentrated in the rail belt, is by bringing up one or two more, is that going to reduce the overall cost of health care in the state? I don't have the answer.
Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Heron. And I'm just trying to, again, I've been working through this missions and measures type thing to my mind, and when I'm looking at legislation, I'm still kind of in that theme here, the investment of the state of Alaska. So several questions on that point. So when we're looking at on page 2, on line 17, it says a lifetime maximum period of 12 years for participation in the programs. To try and maximize the amount of people that are can participate in these programs, and hopefully this will be a successful program, I know that's your intent. Would we be serving more people if that was for 10 years or maximum or 14? And what discussions happened surrounding that number of 12 years? Why was that selected?
I don't want to fumble and stumble over this, Mr. Chairman, so could I ask Pat Carr to come forward to try to help us in that question?
Pat. I'm sorry, I didn't know who Pat was. I wasn't going to say Mr. or Ms.
Yeah.
I've already fumbled on that one.
Okay. Yeah. Remarkably, administration is going to defer to my expert.
That's probably a good move. Welcome, Ms. Clement. Please, for the record, identify yourself and provide your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Stoltz. For the record, my name is Liz Clement. I am proud staff to Representative Bob Heron. Conversations that have taken place. First, Representative Newman, through the chair, if I may point you to page 3 of the bill, beginning at line 16. Beginning at line 13. The department may approve loan repayment and direct incentive programs. I'll skip a little bit. At line 16, for an initial period of 3 years, a renewal of 3 years. This would allow an applicant to participate in the program for 6 years. This is a number that was arrived at through conversations with many folks, with healthcare providers who are faced with recruiting these professionals, for professionals who have loans to repay, and for communities who have noticed patterns in how long it takes for people to come embedded in their communities and true community members who will stay even after they're receiving money. On the first go-around, they are cut off at a maximum of 6 years. For very few select individuals who may go back to school to be certified for a profession that is also included in the bill. For example, a nurse who goes back to school to be a doctor, who is not allowed to do that in the state at this time. They may reapply to the program for another 2-3-year cycles, so another total 6 years under the doctor profession. But at this point in time, it is not a 12-year lifetime maximum for everyone. There are other cycles.
Another question? Representative Newman. Any questions? Representative Heron, on page 4, we talk about the line 17 through 23, the amount of annual payments for a professional. I'm assuming that those would be recordable income for the people that are receiving those then? And is that, how does that work? Does the state make a direct payment to that person? That person's responsible? Is that is an income for them? Is it a grant?
Is it a
Through the chair, Representative Newman, the answer is yes.
Recordable income?
Yes.
And just one more follow-up on that, Mr. Chair. Is there an opportunity so that some of these health care professionals may qualify for several of these sections because some of them are very specialized, and they hopefully will have enough qualified care physicians in the state that have two or three different categories that they can serve through or professions? Is there an opportunity, or is this made so that one person can only apply or get one of these grants, so that you can't get qualified for two of these?
I'll ask Liz to give it a shot.
Thank you, Representative Herron. Representative Newman, through the chair. Yes, the intent is that a professional may only go through one at a time. To do this. The bill does give the Department of Health and Social Services the latitude, as with any program, to develop regulations that would specify and detail procedures and eligibility details for the program, and it is the intent that that would be included in those.
Just wanted to clarify that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fairclough.
Welcome. Can you tell me how we arrived at the dollar amounts for loan repayments and how we compare to the other states that have been listed as far as offering the incentives?
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, that's an excellent question. The work group that initially put together the concept proposal that has turned into this bill considered factors such as educational cost standards across the nation, such as difficulty in recruiting professionals in these different categories, and also national pay scale ranges. For example, Tier 1 healthcare professionals, which would be physicians, pharmacists, and dentists, their schooling tends to be lengthier and more expensive than some of the other professionals included here. As far as how we compare to other states, each state's program is a little bit different, tailored to its own needs. The dollar amounts listed in House Bill 78 tend to be right around the median, looking at the different professions that are included in this, as we've looked at other states as programs who also include similar and, in some cases, the same professions. There are some outlier states that offer more or less, but given Alaska's unique challenges in recruiting many of these healthcare professionals, the work group who assembled the initial proposal felt that these were adequate numbers that would neither short the state nor prove ineffective in attracting and retaining professionals.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I'd just like to note, this bill was very close to passing in 2010. I think it was even funded as a fiscal note in the budget, and it didn't make it out of this committee because there were some cost questions. So this well could have been implemented 2 years ago. I think we had a grind of other activities, and maybe the fiscal note issue might have not. I'm trying to remember the history, but it came very close to passing, and this we've spent the intervening 2 years on quite a bit of scrubbing this up, and sometimes things don't get out of here right away. And this is an example of something that it could have barely, as Representative Herron is aware, this how close this was to near passage 2 years. Not that that's relevant, but only historically we came very close to enacting this a couple of years ago. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick questions. Is there any kind of cost of living adjustment to these amounts, or are these amounts set?
It's set. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, and they're set.
Okay, great. And the other one is, could you just tell me briefly the difference between an advanced nurse practitioner and a nurse practitioner? I think I know, but I'm not for sure.
You know, why don't we defer that? Do you mind when the ANP representative? We'll just wait till her testimony. I can tell you, I haven't dealt with them, but I could probably bungle up the answer. any other questions?
In the north
today, right? I know. I just.
Sorry, we had a long week.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Representative Herron, our staff, do we know that we've had a great effort in the state of Alaska, a lot of support by the legislature for the medical professions and trying to recruit professionals, as you just said. How many different programs do we have in this state for recruiting professionals in the medical profession? It seems like we've got, you know, we've got WICHE, we've got WAMI. There's quite a few different programs, and I'm trying to get a sense of how much money we're putting into the medical field. Not that we don't need it, but we've got lots of needs in the state. Do we know?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I would like to get back to you with a more detailed answer. If I may just provide a little bit of information right now. As you say, there are WICHE and WAMI, which are slightly different types of programs, but yes, they are state-supported programs to boost our healthcare workforce. Currently, the federally funded programs operating in Alaska, just a few examples, you've got the National Health Service Corps, there's Indian Health Service, Folk, and some others. The problem, as Representative Herring has mentioned, is with that federal funding comes federal requirements on where you can place them and what you need to do with that money, which has still just left us in the situation we are today, where many folks, both rural and urban, cannot receive adequate care.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Herring.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Herring, if yes, the medical community, and this comes up in the Medicare issue, it comes up all across what the biggest shortages are in terms of physicians. It's family practice doctors and internists, and then if you ask what else, it's family practice doctors and internists. And family practice doctors get paid probably the least of all of the physicians, you know, $125,000, $200,000 a year, which is nice, but a fraction of what the specialists get paid. So if I'm correct that the greatest need is family practice doctors and internists right now, is there anything in the bill, and I know we talked about this last year, I forgot the answer, is there anything in the bill that would grant a priority to those high-need professions that we have so that this money isn't going to physicians who are in lower demand practices where they make $800,000, $900,000 a year and maybe don't need the subsidy?
Or therapists?
Is that would that be covered through the whole board process? And the, not to jump ahead of your question.
Through the chair, Representative Garrett, it's where the board identifies the greatest needs.
Thank you. And I appreciate that. I knew it was addressed. I just couldn't find it. And then just a comment, Representative Newman, on the WAMI issue. I think WAMI is a great program, but it doesn't do anything to differentiate between the high-need doctors that we have and the doctors who maybe aren't in such a great need of a subsidy. It's whatever you want to practice. And so the need for this bill is that it targets it the areas and the needs where they're the greatest. I like the WAMI program, but it doesn't produce as many family practice physicians as we'd like.
And if I can interject, unlike the WAMI program, there's stricter criteria on addressing, helping address underserved, unserved, where there's a malapportion of service. We might have enough, but they're not in the right places. All those can be criteria. Unlike WAMI, this program will not allow somebody to get licensed in cosmetic surgery or how to do factory assembly line trick knees. Is that an oversimplification?
To some, it's right on the spot.
This is really the hitting to the core, and that's the commissioner and that board will working with the medical communities. I sat in through a lot of these hearings. I don't mean to nominate. Representative Gettenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to continue on that thought, what WAMI does is puts kids through medical school. That could be 5, 6, 7 years down the road. What this does is it brings the doctor up tomorrow. I mean, I think, you know, and hopefully we keep building that that bridge that we need people to come up here and for. I always ask doctors who I go to see what you know, if they were recruited, what brought them up, and really, really even more important, what's kept them here. And it's some of the things that we lose doctors for outside. Marriage. One doctor I asked in Alaska said he was recruited, he kept up here. Hockey. Hockey saved his kid. They're not going anywhere. I thought that was really relevant. But this brings doctors here today, and I think that's what's relevant.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I apologize because I've no doubt heard this number before, too, but I'm getting older and my memory isn't what it used to be. Representative Heron, on page 5 at line 27, where we're talking about who can get money out of this, it says may not exceed 90 participants annually, as described, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd just like to know where that number came from. Why is it 90 participants annually?
Jim Heron.
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, basically it's finding the sweet spot. It had to do a lot with cost control. We're going to review this in 2019, and we might find out that it's the best thing since the permanent fund, or we might find out it doesn't work. So, cost control.
I don't think we're going to have a problem over exceeding that with $2.9 million. That's just not going to stretch far enough.
Right. Mr. Chairman, if I might, I understand that, but on the other hand, the amount of money is a function of how much money we put into it rather than what the law says. And so I was just wondering, where the 90 participants number came from.
Cost control, is that the,
yeah.
Is the ceiling? That's,
yes, sir.
Okay. If there are no other questions, I want to get to the public testimony, and we can come back for a final round. We'll go right to Christine Potter, and we'll give us a short lesson on advanced nurse practitioners and comment on the bill.
Hi, my name is Christine Potter. I'm the president for the Alaska Nurse Practitioner Association. I'd like to give my testimony in favor of House Bill 78 and the committee substitute. There are over 500 nurse practitioners in Alaska. They provide over 850,000 primary care visits to Alaskans each year. 40% of nurse practitioners work in medically underserved communities, 79% accept Medicare for reimbursement, 88% accept Medicaid, 39% practice in rural areas, 8% are the sole licensed providers in their communities. Over 70% of nurse practitioners practice family care. I would like to answer the question regarding the difference between advanced nurse practitioner and a nurse practitioner. There really isn't any in the state. The technical term is an advanced nurse practitioner, but it's used interchangeably with the term nurse practitioner. So there isn't any difference between that.
ANP sounds cooler than NP.
I'm sorry, what?
ANP sounds cooler than NP.
I agree, absolutely.
Okay.
Are there any questions?
Any other questions? Thank you very much for staying with us, Ms. Potter. Diane Behrens is here. Thank you very much.
And the sponsors and the committee.
Thanks. Diane Behrens is here for questions. We'll have her, I believe she's probably online, or is she online? We'll come to her if there are any questions. Just to make you aware she's here. Debbie Thompson from Anchorage. Are you still with us, Ms. Thompson?
Yes, I am.
Please proceed with your testimony after identifying yourself.
My name is Debbie Thompson. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Nurses Association, and you've had a good explanation of this bill, and I'd just like to speak in favor of it. Thank you for your time on this bill.
Yeah, that was very succinct, and appreciate that. Thank you. It's been a pleasure working with you on other issues in the past.
Thank you. You too, and you can thank Mark for keeping me short.
Okay. Don't give him too much credit for anything. Next we have Mary Sullivan. Ms. Sullivan, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here. I just was listening in. Liz asked me to be here in case there were questions. So, of course, for the record, I'm Mary Sullivan, Alaska Primary Care Association, and we're in support of this bill. We hope that you will be too.
And just like to acknowledge, I appreciate where we took our testimony, where we took our public hearing during, I believe it was still the summer, maybe in the fall of 2011, was right to the convention or the annual meeting of the Primary Care Association. I appreciate, I think we arranged it for the lunch break or somewhere around there, so we didn't disrupt the conference, and that was a very valuable meeting. I appreciate you allowing us to have the meeting there. I think it was probably one of the more appropriate and useful venues.
Well, we certainly appreciate you coming to us, so thank you for that.
Okay. Is there anybody else wishing to? Oh, Ms. Darling. I just have the wrong sheet here.
Marie Darlin for AARP, and I just want to add a couple more comments. AARP really, you know, wants our citizens to stay here after retirement, and the most important thing that they're going to want to know that will keep them here is the availability of quality health care. And so this bill should go a long way in helping towards that, because we know what the needs are. And we do want to say that we know that there is a problem, really, for some of our people in finding a health care provider, and you're all well aware of that. And if people can't and have to leave and go south, Alaska will be the loser. And this might help as far as this business of what this is going to cost. But I want to remind you that, for one thing, the economic value of these retirees who stay here is actually estimated at over $1.7 billion. And so if they leave, that's what they take with them. They also take all their volunteer services and all the other kinds of services they add to a community. So I think anything that we can do to help keep our retirees and seniors here would be beneficial to the state in many ways, and therefore we do support this bill and urge you, you know, to pass it, and you have our letter.
Any questions for Ms. Darling? Thank you very much, as always, and I save the best for last. I don't believe, is there anybody else? We do have a couple of folks from Soldotna Hospital. Welcome. Mr. Davis, the new director, I believe, and you're observing this as well. You give me a nod if you're supportive. Okay, there we go. That's a now official's testimony. And his able assistant, Mr. Richards. So, is there any other public testimony? We will close the public testimony. The fiscal note. It is not a small one. No. Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the sponsor, is there a requirement to be an Alaska resident?
No. No, we're trying to attract, we want Alaskans, but we're trying to attract others to become Alaskans as well.
Mr. Chairman, that's my point. Are we requiring them to become an Alaska resident, or can they be 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off in other communities? I just went through the eligibility requirements again, and nowhere do I see that once we start the payments that they need to become Alaska residents. So I'm wondering if we're allowing them in and out of the state for periods of time so that they wouldn't qualify for Alaska's permanent fund. So we're going to let them pay off their loans and then commute?
Good question. We could maybe someone could volunteer to attempt to answer that. It's not been brought up that I know of.
Mr. Chairman, I was thinking about the Alaska workforce, and we're looking at investing upwards of $300,000 per person in paying off student loans, depending on where you qualify for. And brings to mind people sitting on planes as oil workers move back and forth between Alaska and other locations. It seems to me if we're going to invest such a large amount of money to attract people into communities that are underserved, that we would want them to be Alaska residents and not commuters.
Representative Karen, are there anything maybe Department of Health and Social Services might be able to respond, if there's anything within the their vetting requirement that might address residency commitments or commitments of time? And Representative Guttenberg?
Yeah, page 4, line 2, number G, where they can prorate loan repayments on hours worked qualify.
Through the chair, Representative Bettenberg, are you looking for just an expansion or clarification of that?
No, I'm to the question of residents.
The line again, you're on
page 4, line 2, G. Department shall prorate loan repayments and direct incentives under the program based upon the number of hours of a qualified employment worked in a quarter. So if somebody's off and on, they could reduce the payments based upon them not being here.
And on that, Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, we're trying to attract quality health care providers into the state of Alaska. I guess it's important to me that they're going to become residents at least for the period of time that we are paying them $35,000 a year to reduce their student loans. If that's not the intent of the legislation, it's good to know.
Would you, is the Department of Health and Social Services, who will, on behalf of the commissioner, I would like them to make comments on. I know there's been a residence that come up here, but I would like to hear the department talk.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Pat Carr. I'm with the Division of Public Health within the Department of Health and Social Services. We would have the latitude under the guidelines set for the program to set parameters about residency or that sort of issue. But I think it also goes, and somebody else may have to help me clarify this, in terms of, and the bill does stipulate the person has to be licensed or exempt from licensing in the state. So that may be a point of some residency requirements related to licensing and being licensed in the state.
Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. It's my understanding you can be licensed in multiple states.
Yes.
So they could acquire a license in this state and still not reside here. I just need clarification. If the bill is going forward and we absolutely know that we're attracting people from outside of the state of Alaska, we're going to bring them in and pay them $35,000 to $50,000 a year to reduce their educational loans, and they're going to maintain jobs in other states at the same time. I just want to know that that's the trade-off that we're making.
Representative Fairclough, through the chair. Yes, it is possible for providers to be licensed in multiple states. So I think this is an issue that would and could be addressed through the guidelines that are set up under the program, and I hear your concern.
Mr. Chairman? You have, I still see a little hesitancy on the comfort level. I want to be responsive to that.
Mr. Chairman, the bill has waited a year to be heard somewhere else, so I certainly don't want to be the person who stopped an opportunity for rural Alaska to attract health care into their communities. And I think that that's the intent of this bill. But if we're going to do it on a rotating basis, I've heard current employers express concerns about those rotations already, and that they really want people inside their communities that are going to engage in the community and become partners in that community. And as I understood it at the start of this conversation, we were doing that by providing cash incentives and other incentives. We provide them also housing incentives in smaller communities. And I would hope that they would want to be residents. That's what I thought we were attracting, were people that wanted to become Alaskans and that would plant roots here and that we would be able to see them after there are loan repayments. And I was hesitating before on the 12 years as Representative Newman had already put up, but understanding that doctors need higher levels of education and that we want those resources again in our more remote areas across the state. So, Mr. Chairman, I certainly am not going to hold up it coming out of committee, but I think that everyone needs to take a few minutes to see whether there should be an eligibility requirement to become an Alaskan if we're going to invest so much.
Representative Edgman and then Dugan.
I'd like to follow up with a point that Representative Fairclough has just made, because I think it's a good point, and I agree with the comments about not holding the bill up as well. But maybe to the department, what are the actual practical implications of somebody, you know, residing in two different states, maybe jetting to Alaska to work and going to the state of Washington or something? Because my experience is that would be far and few in between. I know that's, well, I'm looking at my experience in Southwest Alaska. I don't know of anybody. I mean, there might be a couple of advanced doctors in Dillingham, for example, who've been there for years who do it. They work 6 months, and then they maybe live somewhere else, so they don't work at all. But a place like Alaska, that'd be pretty hard to do. But I'm not trying to dispute the point. I agree with it. I'm just trying to get some kind of an interpretation, the practical end of it all.
Representative Edmund, through the chair, I do think that's an issue that would have to be considered in terms of the application process and the PR that would happen for the program in terms of emphasizing the desire that is to bring people into the state and increase providers for our local practices. So I think that would be an issue that would have to be vetted through some of the guidelines of the program.
Representative Dugan and then Fairclough.
If she's going to pursue the same point, I'll yield.
Mr. Chairman, I just think we need it on the table. I don't want to be argumentative, but I know I have sat on a plane next to a dentist that's commuting back and forth from rural Alaska on a plane before. So I know that there are dentists, and so there are probably others in Alaska. Specifically, some of our corporations are offering nice education incentives to reduce loan debts. They've recognized that is enticing to students who are carrying large loan debts. I just don't know how prevalent it is, and I also think that it may be necessary. We may not be able to just on the amount. I just don't know how those other programs are in other states. Was that a criteria in the other states that they become residents, or did we allow that flexibility in those states too? So we just need to know.
Mr. Chairman, I can actually shed some small bit of light on this. If I might, I've spent a lot of time in hospitals in the last 2 years, and some considerable part of my treatment was done by people who are called travelers, who actually, the most recent one that I was treated by, actually, she lived in, I think it was Florida, and did 6 months of treatment in various places, and she was, in addition to everything else, using it as a way to see the United States, you know. So I think that there's a possibility that being too concerned with the residency requirement might be actually inimical to making the program work in terms of getting qualified people to come and practice. I don't know enough about it, you know, in terms of numbers or anything like that. I just know that it happens and that we may not be in a position to impose a residency requirement and expect to get as much people as we want as a result.
Representative Aaron.
Thank Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and through the chair to Representative Fairclough, is that, you know, I understand the concern, and so, you know, what we can do is, I think I view it as making sure all the lug nuts are tight, is that maybe in a technical amendment that we could craft over the next however many days, and that it could not be so focused necessarily that it's about becoming an Alaska resident, and like Pat said, is maybe that we could put some careful sideboards on that it channels it toward that effort, because just the way I understand it, and the way I'm on board with this legislation, and the way that the people back home, especially primary care people that need the people to come, and whether you're in Anchorage or whether in my region, is we want them to come and make a long-term commitment, because that's the only way that we get this continuity of care. Because I get frustrated that every time that my son, who needs treatment, he gets to see a new person every time he goes. And so, you know, I think that after listening to Pat and the legitimate concerns is maybe that we do need to slip something into the legislation that makes sure that when they develop these regs and this conversation is realized, the concern is realized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to work with Representative Heron to see if what we might work on. I don't want to be an obstacle on it. I think that it's a good idea, and I know how difficult. I used to live in a small community. Some might not say it was rural Alaska, but Dutch Harbor didn't have a bridge at that particular point, and I took a boat back and forth to school. So if there was a medical emergency and there was a storm, we were in trouble, even if it was a short distance. So I'm happy to do that. I just can't pass on the opportunity, Mr. Chairman, to say, though, I can recognize that need, and I'm just thinking oil and gas, and that we can see that health care, that people may want to be in two different locations, but when we talk oil and gas, we need to make sure that they're residents of Alaska, so I'll just set that aside.
Representative Thomas. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I grew up in rural Alaska in Haines, and most of the doctors we had, I don't know if you call them denture doctors or what, but we had Indian Health Service. So they came up, and one of the doctors removed my mother's lung in Mount Etchkin, and then he moved to Haines, but they came up here and were paid off their loans. There was a very expert knee doctor whose daughter serves, believes in the Senate, who came up here and got his residency and has been here. And I think it's our job, if the people come here, to attract them and make them stay. If we pay, I know most people, even teachers, are here for 1 or 2 years, don't like it, they're gone. They're not going to wait here for 6 years to pay off their loans. But my question is going to be to you, Mr. Heron. What happens if a doctor does come up here through Indian Health Service, gets his residency, and he's asking for his loan repayment off of one side while he's getting it from the feds, is there, so they don't get dual payments, you know what I mean? That's just to stop it, but I'm just, making a point that people have come here, and we had the one doctor in Haines probably there 50, I don't know how old he is, 50-some years, and, he finally retired, but I think any of us who live in rural Alaska know that we can probably find a doctor that's been in our villages or around there 50 years. Once you get there, you either fall in love with Alaska or you leave the first year or two. Nobody's going to sit out there and freeze. Put another log on the fire.
I don't know. I could make comments of different roles he might fill in Haines, but I don't want to bring in his marital status. That'd be your fault. Right? That's
Representative Stoltz saying that, Joyce.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
This has been a bad day.
Mr. Chairman, to respond to the co-chair is you can't double dip. it would be prevented.
You, Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Herron, when you're looking at this, again, the competitive nature of this, because it's confined to 90 people, and the opportunity that we're going to want to try and have entice people to get into this profession and excel in specific healthcare professions, again, because of that competitive nature, I think that, again, this transition that you're going to be going through, try and keep that in mind. I mentioned that, but again, I look at the fiscal note on this too, and the needs of the state, and what I tried to measure out in this is the value of all this. If we're getting specific medical professionals in certain areas of the state through the Commissioner of Health, which I think is a good thing to help reduce travel costs by Alaskans, or going from one specialist to another specialist to another specialist, if we're specifically targeting those throughout the state, I think that's a very good idea. Again, that missions and measures, how do we measure back the benefits to the state financially to the citizens of the state of Alaska? Is there that mechanics involved there? You know, that's where I see more of a benefit of this bill. I mean, obviously you get the medical facilities there, but again, the payment back to Alaskans to not have to do that extra travel to go to several different specialists because they're targeted by Hess. Is that what discussions have gone on in that?
Well, two-part question, the fiscal note and the 90 participants. It's going to take a while to ramp up, and if we get to a point where we have more than 90 people begging to get into the system because they find Alaska attractive, they find them to be competitive with other states, that means the program is going to get successful. So I guess we need to get it going, but it's going to take a couple of years even to get even remotely close to 90. And as far as the fiscal note is it's you know, nearly 2.9, but 2. It's about 2.1 is GF. The rest, the providers have to participate. They have to put skin in the game, and so that's why I think that it's not just the state saying, "Okay, here's some cash to come up and work." Is the provider is going to have to put up their own money, and they're going to go after the people that they think will fit. It isn't just going to be Johnny. Come one, come all. They're going to, participants are going to go after certain candidates. And so I think that that's what makes this an unusual vehicle to, you know, at least stabilize the workforce in the medical field in Alaska.
Thank you. We're going to get to the wrap. I'll just let you know it's my intent. I don't want to slow it down, but I think if the other side can spend 9-10 months talking about local hire on another bill, we can spend a couple of days. And that's let's get this ironed out. I don't want to do this type of provision on the fly and have it be kind of something that doesn't allow us to do what we want to do. I would like to have the commissioner give us some written assurances on how the board process would work, and if necessary, have a very well-defined amendment, which I don't think is a good thing to do on the floor on the fly, or and it's in our possession. Let's get it right. Now we've got the budget and some other things on the floor. Probably isn't, we're not as well positioned to put this up right away, but, so I don't think we're going to slow down eventually getting this to the floor, Bob. So it's I just didn't fix this. I'm sensitive to making sure it lasts. Maybe it doesn't. I'd like to vet all these things just with a little bit better information on the table, and maybe we end up with the exact same product we have, but we can do it with better assurances, Representative. Edgman and then Dugan.
Just quickly to respond to Representative Newman's question about missions and measures, I'd just like to remind everyone, looking at the email from the Alaska, or the letter from the Alaska Commission on Aging, and the testimony from Ms. Darling about the increasing, the largest, the fastest growing segment of population, seniors, and accessible health care is a big issue in terms of keeping them in Alaska, and so on and so forth. So just to add that to the Representative Harris' response.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in reflecting on the
discussion that we've been having here, you get into these situations all the time when you have competing values, right? The first, the highest value of a piece, this particular piece of legislation, ought to be to get doctors and nurses to the right places. You know, it's an important value, but in my view, a secondary value to keep them there. Because really, what you're trying to do is not really stabilize the population in a particular place of doctors and nurses. It's to get them there in the first place. And if you have to roll them over every 6 months, that's not the best way to do it, but at least it's a way to do it. So I appreciate the points of view here, but if you just look at it from that point of view, then your difficulties of crafting an amendment here are a lot less, because it is a tier. It's not, you know, it's not a flat line, it's a tier. And so as long as you look at it that way, makes it a lot easier to figure out what it is you want to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll set this aside, Representative. Not a desire. I think you see enthusiasm for the program, but I'd rather not spend a lot of time debating the issue on the floor, because it's one we all have passions about. And if we can get to it and have all the answers, it might be the exact same bill, for all I know. Maybe there are the assurances, but it will be back before us at the earliest possible date we have. And I think our commissioner can also help assist us through written assurances on how this process will work. That would become a part of the record as well. So we'll...
Can I take over now?
We have a question or comment. Go ahead.
Thank you. If we're not going to let the bill out today, then I do have one concern, Representative Herron, that maybe can be addressed. The bill talks about, in the physician area, physicians for which we have a shortage. We actually have a shortage for very highly paid physicians as well, and there are other reasons why some of those folks don't come up here. The most acute shortage is family practice and internists, I think, but there are knee doctors and who say there's a shortage of knee doctors because it's a graying population. There was a shortage of heart doctors for a while because there was a monopoly situation that was going on for a while, and that really. I'm wondering if there's language we could consider that will say if there's a shortage of family practice doctors and internists, let's say, those physicians should receive a priority. Because it's not the money that's stopping the other doctors, the specialists who get the much higher salaries from coming up. It's other things usually. So I don't know if there's language we can work on to focus it on primary care physicians to the extent there remains a shortage of them.
Mr. Chairman, I look forward to working with all members on possible amendments.
All right. We will set this aside, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you. The schedule for next week, Monday, Operating Budget House Bill 284. Mental Health Budget House Bill 285. And since the public is out there listening, we will be taking testimony on Tuesday, March 6th, on the operating budget. And on Monday, also an introduction and adoption of the CS, incorporating the subcommittee recommendations. And then Tuesday we'll be taking public testimony, 1:30 to 2:30 Juneau, 2:45 to 3:45 Bethel, Cotsby, Barrow, Nome, Delta, Offnets, 4 to 5:15 is Anchorage. And then Wednesday, again, operating budget, House Bill 284 and 285, public testimony, 1:30 to 2:45 Fairbanks, 3 to 4. Sitka, Wrangell, Petersburg, Dillingham, Cordova, Onalaska, 4:15 to 5, Homer, Kenai, Valdez, Ketchikan, Kodiak, Mattsu, Glen Ellen, Tok, and Seward. And we also have three bills that are on the calendar, HB 179, Animal Cruelty, HB 182, Electronic Distribution of Agency Reports, and HB 301, Sunset of Voting Regulations. And again, just note that Tuesday we'll recess, because we don't know how many people are leaving, and we'll reconvene at 1:30 on Wednesday. So.
And, Mr. Co-Chair, I don't raise the expectations that we'll get to those bills. We just wanted to get them positioned for hearings. So that's the likelihood of hearing those on Wednesday or...
And then Thursday, Friday, no meetings. So with that, I think we're done. Thank you for your work today. You have a good weekend. We're adjourned.